This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. No sign that there will be any movement to end the government shutdown when the Senate's back in session tomorrow, and the president hinting at government personnel cuts that could dwarf DOGE.
I'm allowed to cut things that should have never been approved in the first place, and I will probably do that.
While blaming Democrats for the shutdown, the White House saying prepare for mass firings of government workers. One suspect dead and three others are now in custody for a ramming attack outside of a synagogue in northern England. Police say one other person was killed and at least three others were hurt in the attack that's now labeled as terrorism. The suspect, a 35-year-old British citizen of Syrian descent. According to a confidential memo obtained by ABC News, President Trump has determined that the United States is now engaged in a formal armed conflict with drug cartels, which the administration has deemed unlawful combatants. The notice was sent to several congressional committees. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 1490 WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
New faces on the Bucks roster. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA head coach Doc Rivers revealed that when he first arrived in Milwaukee, he told GM John Horst straight up, the Bucks roster was too old and too slow.
John knew. We talked about it. I felt strongly that it's hard to win at the pace that we were trying to play at. We still won games and we're good, but, you know, I just felt strongly that we need more speed. We need more guys that can guard multiple positions.
The Bucks training camp now underway. College football. Wisconsin faces number 20th ranked Michigan. Kickoff 11 a.m. Saturday. Badgers quarterback Danny O'Neill has already been sacked 13 times so far in just the first four games of this season. That's one more than the 12 sacks they allowed all last year.
Maybe changing up what we do pre-snap a little bit, trying to simplify some things. We know what we're going to see. We just got to be able to go translate it from the film room to the field and from practice to the game.
That's Badgers quarterback Danny O'Neill with sports on Mike Clemens.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The incomparable Jane Matnera. You're a coffee drinker.
I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning for most of my career. Yeah. You need coffee.
Something.
Or a slap across the face or something. How much coffee do you drink a day? How many cups
not
of coffee?
Not as much as you might think. Maybe 2 16-ounce cups, more or less. Maybe not quite that much some days.
Zahmer, is that true?
I mean, from what I can verify, I don't know what he drinks in the privacy of his own home.
No one knows.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. All the email traffic I've gotten from folks on the shutdown is pointing fingers. Republicans blaming Democrats, Democrats rightly blaming Republicans. It's interesting. When you look at the bottom line on this, is neither side, Democrats don't trust Republicans. It's that simple. This isn't a matter of Republicans not trusting Democrats because Democrats don't have any power. All they've got is the leverage of a handful of votes to say, no, we want something. And this is the interesting part of watching everybody doing their political jockeying and, you know, the responses I've gotten from people. Democrats are entitled to ask for some things. That's how government works. You got to take something back to the district. Got to give the base a little something. Something that Trump and the Republicans don't seem to care about. And it's not that they don't understand it. They don't care about it. This is about conquest. This isn't about governance. So let's get that out of the way right from the start. This isn't about, you know, negotiating, finding common ground. This isn't about, you know, moving the needle a little bit. This is about absolute conquering of the Democratic Party. This is about conquering things that they view as liberal, like Medicaid, something that they've hated since it was passed. And they're going to go after Medicare, and they're going to go after Social Security. They're going to go after what's left of our tattered social safety net because they want working people pliable, desperate, and exploitable. Very simple. So when I saw John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, come out and say, you know, the government shut down because, you know, Democrats wanted that. No, they didn't. No Democrat wanted the Senate to be shut down, wanted the government to be shut down. None of them. But according to Thune, it's because Schumer and a bunch of liberal, far-left activist groups. And you go, wait a second, are you talking about Chuck Schumer? Really? And the answer is it doesn't matter. They have a narrative. They've got to push that narrative. And that narrative is very simple, that even the dim can regurgitate it, because I've gotten it 100 times. You're shutting the government down for illegals. I even got one that said, Democrats are shutting the government down because they want everybody to be trans. Where that came from, no idea. But I'm not in right-wing echo chamber space as much as I used to be. So that might be a thing now. I don't know. But I'm looking at this moment, and what's infuriating to me is the message that I'm not seeing in our mainstream corporate-controlled media is that what Democrats are actually doing is taking a stand to ensure that what little bit of safety net under the feet of working people in the form of the Affordable Care Act is being gutted. You know, Trump is getting what he wanted when John McCain did the thumbs down. It's just not as fast as he wants. It's fast. It's going to happen. And it's going to hurt a lot of people. And Democrats are going, no, we got into this business to help people. This isn't about only feeding the billionaires. Now look, Democrats are not adverse to feeding the billionaire class. They do it too. But in this instance, they're on the right side. And I wouldn't say that unless I truly believed that saving the Affordable Care Act, saving health care for millions of people, becoming a country that, I don't know, attempts to possibly, maybe a little bit, live up to that wannabe title of Christian nation, or at least somewhat spiritual or somewhat decent. It's ironic to me, though, and this is the weird part, and I got into this back and forth today with someone focused on the illegals getting something. It's the illegals getting all this, and that's what all the cuts are, and you want the illegals to get health care. I go, no, I want sick people to be cared for if they get sick. Like other countries do, if I were to go to another country and I got sick there, they'd help me. Not so much here. And this is the weird part for me. And as I explained to this person today, I go, the radical self-interest that you should take from this is not that you're wrong, in which you are, because undocumented people are not getting federally funded health care. It's not legal. It's not possible. And it would be a reason for ICE to go find them. Think alleged a little. But why not ask yourself, especially where this person lives in a very rural area, how long does your rural hospital survive if they got all of the health care that poor people are getting there? Especially in rural communities that are propped up by Medicaid. These cuts are more than just handouts for billionaires. It's kicking working people in the teeth. And look, Trump is not wasting any time using this to his best interest. They're firing, I guess, a whole bunch of government employees on day one. That happened. And more are coming. And Trump is using this opportunity to punish those states that voted against him. I think it was Politico that reported that. Oddly enough, the cuts, the billions of dollars in cuts went to states that voted for Kamala Harris. You think that was by accident? And the answer is no. The Office of Budget Management, OMB, Office of Management and Budget, they cut $8 billion from something that they called lefty climate change stuff. Congress allocated this. This is why Democrats don't trust Republicans. And do you blame them? As I asked yesterday, which is more worthless, Trump's word or his signature? Because, well, they're not really living up to either. Want to hear your thoughts. You okay with this shutdown? You angry about it? Think it should end soon? I'm hoping it does, but not with the end of healthcare for millions of people. going to take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Bryce is going to be here to share some thoughts on his campaign. Also, this, all this. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we having fun yet? Is this everything we thought the Trump administration would be? Was you putting chips down on the bingo card? Are you coming right? Shut down that whatever that was at Quantico, and the messaging coming out of it. Are you tired yet? Are we ready for a change? Are we ready for people who actually want to go to Washington or to the halls of power and actually do something to make people's lives better? Are we there yet? Or do we need more suffering, more pain, more division? Do we need more of that? I'm hoping this is enough for us. And, you know, this next election cycle, we got a chance to undo some of the damage, which is why I'm thrilled to have my next guest come on and share some thoughts on his campaign. Randy Bryce is an iron worker, union brother, also congressional candidate in Wisconsin's 1st congressional district. Also throw in veteran and all-around good guy. Interesting timing for this. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rick. Always a pleasure to talk to you. It's been too long since we last talked.
So congrats on the willingness to throw yourself back in that fishbowl running for Congress there in Wisconsin's 1st congressional district. I hope people will check out your website at randybryceforcongress.com. But let's start with why are you doing this to yourself, Randy?
Well, you know, the first time I ran was when Donald Trump just got elected. For the 2018 campaign. And we saw what kind of damage he was going to do. People in the community were terrified, especially the immigrant community. And it was during a year-long May Day march that I decided during a VOSIS march with thousands of people, where I had seen these people that were terrified have just looks of strength on their face. And they felt emboldened to be there with so many people. And that was because of the solidarity that we were able to show through everybody. They knew that they were safe in a group of other people marching. We'll just say, you know, and we got into repeal and replace Paul Ryan. We got halfway there. We did repeal him, yeah. But we didn't replace him. And the guy running right now is actually worse than Paul Ryan was, because he actually put his name and is willing to take away the health care of millions and millions of Americans, including I don't know how many tens of thousands in the 1st district.
Since you brought both of those issues up in the first line, immediately as soon as the shutdown happened, the first thing I heard from all my Red Hat friends is the Democrats shut down government for illegal immigrants to get health care. And you go, you know, could you get any more simplistic messaging? That is wrong, but here we are. It's about the immigrants. It's about health care. It's about government. This is why I'm really angry about the people who are in Washington. They're supposed to actually be leaders.
Absolutely. And, you know, you need to look at who's actually in control of the government, which is, I mean, that's another thing that's kind of funny, because you have the presidency, you got the White House, you have the House, and you have the Senate. And to blame the Democrats is laughable. We can't control any laws that get made, but we can control the message. And that's what we need to do. But again, it's, you look, there's not one single person that's here illegally. without documentation that is getting access to health care. That's not taking place. Yeah,
but here's the other part of this. It's the Hunger Game mentality that keeps being thrown up. You know, this they play on our jealousy. They play on our scarcity. They on our own insecurities and fears. Because look, if I lose my health care, I'm screwed, as millions of Americans are. But what they've focused on is someone's getting something that you're not. Instead of saying, hey, why doesn't everyone get health care? Why isn't that a right in this country? Why are we taking millions of people's health care away because of the big, beautiful nightmare? Why aren't we talking about that?
That's a very good question. As you look at social media platforms, look at who's taking those over and changing the algorithms around so that they can see what they want to see and not so much what we have to say. Every time I hear something about, because a big issue of mine is, providing health care for everybody. And I keep hearing from everybody else opposed to that. How are we going to pay for that? Well, for one, let's not bail out Argentina with $20 billion. And they're the ones, too, that are selling their soybeans to China because our American farmers can't sell to them. So that market's already gone for who knows how long.
Yeah, but here's the other part of this, and I'm with you to a degree on that, but how about we don't give $1 trillion to people who don't need it? How about we don't give billionaires more? How about we don't make Elon Musk even richer? How about we start there?
Oh, that's absolutely true. And that should be the first step. That should be the first step, is making sure that those with means pay their fair share. I mean, when you're talking about contributing to Social Security, people like Elon Musk, they're what? After, is it like even a minute after the new year when they're done paying their fair share to the government because of the cap?
Or if they pay anything. Or if they pay anything at all, because their income, the income that goes into that isn't taxed the same way.
They're getting tax write-offs for private jets. We're going the wrong direction. That's why I'm running. I know it's going to take a lot of work, and especially against somebody that's like chair of that deals with the Bitcoin industry. Right. He's got instant money right there. But this goes a lot deeper than that. It's everybody in the entire country.
Walk through that with me, because that's an interesting point. Because as soon as you were saying, this is a guy who he's awash in money because of the Bitcoin industry wants government to make this okay, to do a little light regulation so it appears okay, so we privatize our money. I look at this and I thought of my grandfather, as soon as you, a World War II veteran, who used to say, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. So when a Bitcoin guy gets, a stable coin or coin or whatever it is, when he's got a flow of cash coming in, that's some payback's got to be happening, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always been follow the money. I mean, first step in union organizing, follow the money. And that's what we need to do here.
Yeah. So I do want to get your thoughts on, this shutdown. Because, again, the messaging has been from Republicans, it's all the Democrats' fault, even though, as you pointed out a moment ago, the Republicans control the House and the Senate and the White House Supreme Court. They control all the levers of power, and yet somehow it's the Democrats' fault for saying, hey, maybe we don't take everyone's health care away. And on the Democratic side, I thought the messaging should have been much more on the, can we trust anything Donald Trump says? Because what I've been saying is, look, which is more worthless, Donald Trump's word or his signature? Because even if they pass a budget or a resolution or funding, is he going to honor it? Is he going to do what he says he's going to do with it?
Right. No, and he's made so many, he made so many promises during the campaign that he hasn't kept. And I think the only time he's told us the truth is when he said he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose a voter. Apparently that's the case, because it's amazing the things that are being done, we all had the chance to read about it in Project 2025. He's doing exactly what we thought he was going to do.
No, they didn't lie. You got to give him credit. They didn't lie. Yeah. How do you see this shutdown going? If you're in Congress, where are you on this shutdown? Because, look, nobody wanted this. I didn't want a shutdown. No. But I think at some point you've got to take a stand and go, look, You know, you want something from us, we want something back. We want to make sure that millions of people aren't left without health care, without the ability to make sure that they get the care that they need. And, oh, by the way, let's talk about the tens of millions of people who it's going to cost more when you take this away from them. Again, we've got such a bad media structure. We're not focusing on any of that.
No. No. And on average, I think it's going to cost the average person $400 more, that's on the ACA, per month, or $5,000 a year. And with the economy the way it is, who can afford that extra money? You know, it's hard enough now making a decision. Do you take your kid to the doctor, or do you, you know, pay rent on time?
Yeah, it's crazy. Now let's I got to flip to the other side, because the shutdown, all of that, that's one side of this. The mm-hmm. other side, did you see the whatever that was in Quantico with our eyelinered Secretary of War, and then whatever that was that Trump did? You got any thoughts?
Unfortunately, I did watch it because I knew it was going to be a topic of discussion with you today. So thanks for making me watch it, Rick. the whole thing. Normally, I don't. It was...
So we're clear. You actually got through all of it? I only got through half of Trump's speech, and then I had to go back later.
Yes, in parts. I couldn't sit down and watch the whole thing at once. I could only handle it in parts. So, yeah, we're right there. But to have this guy who's totally unqualified to run the military, I mean, the whole Secretary of Defense, he changed it, the name, to Secretary of War. I don't want to go attack other countries. I'm opposed to war as it is. I'm a member of Veterans for Peace. And to fly in the top brass from everywhere in the United States military for something that could have been done, I mean, that cost millions. That could have been done over, you know, you could have had Zoom calls or anything else. But why would you jeopardize bringing all our military in and putting them in one place at the same time? And this guy who's talking about, you know, just unbelievable. I couldn't believe the things coming out of his mouth to where they wanted to take he's talking about the military back to before I was in. And, you know, we came a long way with as far as civil rights go when I was in the mid 80s.
It takes some stones, though, don't you think? All those people in the crowd who have spent years defending this country and years,
their lives for, in some cases.
Yeah, and don't you think it takes some stones to call them fat, woke, and weak?
Quite a bit, especially from this guy, you know. And he's saying we're not going to tolerate, you know, signs or whatever, when he's a walking billboard for white supremacy. It's crazy. And then just, yeah, he's, you know, he served, give him some credit for serving, but it wasn't anywhere near, and he doesn't have anywhere near the experience of all these brilliant minds that he was talking to. And now we're there. I thought they were going to have to make him swear a loyalty test. And as far as I, maybe it happened.
No, this is what I had thought before the meeting happened. I thought this is what this is going to be. This is the beginning of Trump taking over the military in a way that moves us in a very fascistic direction, getting them to take the loyalty oath. And the ones that didn't would be shown the door, because, as I understand, we're thinning a lot of the generals out. Mm-hmm. Now, some say we need to because there's some bloat or whatever, but not on a loyalty test basis.
Correct.
And that should be concerning to all of us, especially when you have the President of the United States saying that we're going to use American cities as training ground. I got to tell you, it makes me, as someone who grew up in an urban area in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, gives me pause.
No, it's totally wrong to do that. And I can tell you, I was an MP when I was in the service, and we did some training as far as how to handle civil unrest and that. But other than that, I don't see these ICE agents or you know, the other military that have the kind of training to be taught to how to deal with it. It's, they just run in and grab somebody with brown skin, and, you know, if they're, they'll tell the people that are there, if they're legit, we'll release them. You'll see them in a little while. But the fact is, they should be going in with warrants ahead of time with people's names, not just making stuff up and, you know, taking on people just for walking down the street or at work.
No.
But this whole meeting thing too. And then when Donald came out And he said, you know, you don't all be quiet because nobody was clapping for him. That's kind of his W's version of please clap. But still, and then him coming out, he's like, you know, if you, you know, you agree with us, you can stay on and, you know, we appreciate you. If not, you can head for the door now and look for another job. Like, well, we know who you are. And, you know, if you don't agree with us, you're going to get fired. That was I took that as a threat.
Oh, no, it's an absolute threat. But those aren't the kind of people that clap. You know, look, I was never in the military, but I know some of those kind of folks. They're not the kind of people you want clapping. Those are the kind of people you want to be very serious. And I got to wonder, walking out of that, you know, what kind of conversations, because they're, I got to be honest, they're our last line of defense for democracy. If they fall in the line, if they follow the order of this guy, we're all in real trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just hearing that they went, there was another meeting that that they had at Fort Bragg where I was stationed. And then you come to find out that they chose people ahead of time that were sympathetic to the president. Why are you even questioning people in the military about if you support the president or not? When I was in, Ronald Reagan was president. And I just hope he didn't send us any place where we didn't need to be sent. But he still was a commander in chief. He still, he told it like he saw it. And there wasn't reason to doubt him.
No.
It was a different kind of Republican back then, even though I totally agree with all of his policies and him being the start of, the downhill slide for unions. I didn't question him the same way I would question if I was in now Donald Trump, where they're actively acting. Because I honestly don't know. Everybody that I served with, I don't know if they were supportive of Republicans or Democrats to this day.
And that's why politicizing the military is such a bad idea.
Absolutely.
And this is why we're in a very dangerous spot. So I want to bring this back to your campaign because, you know, everybody I talk to is like, you know, just why can't we get things done? You know, why can't we send people there who want to get things done? Well, here's an opportunity. You're somebody who wants to get things done, wants to get things built. I just saw a news story from the New York Times. Trump's going to pull like $18 billion in infrastructure spending out of New York, probably just because it's New York. For me, I don't want that kind of leadership. I want to rebuild this country. I want to make this country as strong and as prosperous and as functional as possible. So working folks like you and me, we can thrive. We can do well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 110%. You know, soldiers are going without pay and they're still continuing with this huge ballroom that's not going to be done until, you know, Donald is ready to leave. And I don't even think he's planning on leaving with him handing out the, you know, Trump 2028 hats in the Oval Office the other day. But so much is being taken from us. And it's, you know, before we used to be accused of the ones, you know, cheering on wealth redistribution. But now it's the opposite. It's our wealth is being taken from us and sent to the very top.
No.
And they don't need it. They don't need it.
No, they don't.
But we can't contribute a million to this campaign or to offer, you know, offer payoff to attend a special meeting in Washington, D.C. that's sent to his family business where he can get, you know, billions richer. Yeah. It's just wrong. I mean, he had Jimmy Carter that, you know, put his peanut farm into, you know.
He ended up having to sell it, actually. But we don't have the ability like Boeing to name a jet after him. Which, again, one of the other appalling things in his speech that nobody really picked up on. And then some weird thing about paper and gold. And that speech should be mandatory reading out loud for every red hat in the country. Before you go to vote in the next election, you should have to read that. Lastly, I want to get the campaign stuff out there. What can people do to help? What can I do to help? Because look, I think we need working class people in the halls of power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Website is randybriceforcongress.com or .org. Either one you use will get you to the website. We have, we made a brand new campaign video, have the platform all laid out there too. If you want to see what I believe in, and most of all, if you could just help get the word out, would be the most appreciative. I know people don't have a lot of money, spare money to spend this time. And it's hard asking for money, but please help share the word and get out to a local protest. Make some noise.
No.
Because again, we can't change the laws right now until we change the Congress in 2026, which I don't see how we can't do.
Yeah.
But from there, we can stop the bleeding and move on and help continue to organize and get more people involved. But the October 18th, there's a No Kings rally all around the country. I'm going to one in Milwaukee, and just hope to see people out in the streets. We can make some noise.
Democracy's participatory. Go borrow Obama's comfortable shoes and find yourself to the streets.
Right.
Randy, I appreciate the time. Best of luck to you. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Rick.
Thanks so much, Randy Bryce. Make sure you check out his website, randybryceforcongress.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Want to hear your thoughts. You ready to get out in the streets? Find those comfortable shoes. Start marching. Sure hope so. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX. La Crosse is home for Matt Nair on Air.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 1490 WLCX.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. The warm weather continues. Tonight, mostly clear, a low in the low 60s. Sunny and hot Friday, high upper 80s. Breezy Saturday, high again upper 80s. Mid-80s Sunday, then cooler next week. It's 71 right now.
Matt Nair on Air.
We are delighted to be joined by the executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Grant Holly is here.
We account for about 67% of the country's cranberries. And then Wisconsin itself, because the cranberry originated here, makes a product that is really good for the environment. And as we're finding out more and more, it's really good for you. Boy, I sound like a commercial.
Matt Nair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, though, the messaging on the right is really incredible and powerful. The number of people who have reached out to me and said, you know, Democrats are shutting the government down because of illegals getting health care is quite remarkable. What you don't hear with that is go, no, it's about the, what, some four and a half million people who are going to lose their health care coverage because of what Republicans have done. And oh, about another 20, 30 million who are going to be severely affected. People like me who are going to pay even higher premiums than we're already paying. We don't quite hear that. The message we get is it's the illegals. Because look, that's to inflame us, to make us angry, tick us off. And of course, then blame the people who are least responsible, the Democrats and poor people, moreover, poor people. And here to share some thoughts on what this means to healthcare in this country, I've asked Debbie White to come talk with us. Debbie is an RN. She's also the president of the Health Professionals and Allied Employees Union, the APAE. You can check out their website, hpae.org. I think I got that right. Debbie, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So walk me through what this shutdown means for working people. Because look, as I said, millions of people are going to lose their coverage. Millions more are going to be affected by it. What's this shutdown mean?
Well, on the forefront of this shutdown are important healthcare issues, cuts to Medicaid, and I mean severe cuts to Medicaid, and the expiration of the ACA tax credits. This isn't about a political dysfunction here. It's about a deliberate choice to prioritize tax breaks for wealthy people at the expense of working class people, at the expense of those who can't afford healthcare or don't have healthcare otherwise.
Now, the message that I'm getting, Debbie, and you know, this is the first I'm hearing of this, message I'm getting is the illegals. We're giving free healthcare to the illegals. It's not average everyday citizens who are affected by these cuts. It's the illegals, Debbie.
That's the wrong message. Well, it's their message and it is false. It's a lie, like many messages coming from them. But I want to know when we became such a callous nation? When did we stop caring for poor and needy? When did we stop caring for our seniors, our disabled, our kids? Because that is who these cuts are going to affect. The other side calls it wasteful. I call it taking care of our most vulnerable in society. Our kids, our elderly, our disabled, our needy.
But, you know, some would ask, you know, when did we ever really care about poor people? I mean, honestly and truthfully, I look at where we are in the discussion. And look, this healthcare thing came up in the one big nightmare bill that just got rammed through. I haven't seen the outrage. And is it, in your opinion, you don't think it's filtered down? Because I look at my governor here in Pennsylvania said potentially 25 rural hospitals are potentially going to close because of these cuts. We've seen in other states, rural hospitals have closed. This is the heart of Trump country. These are the people who should be going, wait a minute, I thought it was the illegals. I'm the one being affected by it. Or do you just maybe think it hasn't trickled down far enough or fast enough?
I don't think people feel it yet, but they will. The cuts are creating a full-blown healthcare crisis. It's going to hurt everybody. As you said, hospitals, clinics, they're going to be forced to close down. We're going to have services cut. Millions in America, hundreds, probably hundreds of thousands in New Jersey alone, will lose healthcare coverage. Disabled, 300,000 disabled, including children, and 60% of our senior citizens who reside in long-term care will be affected. For many people, it's the only way they can survive. I don't understand why we don't realize that it's then going to trickle down to cost for us.
Do you think it is? You know, I have a friend who's the head of Social Security Works, and he says, look, we've done such a great job over the years of fighting back the assault on Social Security and Medicare. We've done such a great job of holding off the massive cuts over the years that people think we're Chicken Little. The sky's falling. But his argument is we've done such a good job of holding back the line that it hasn't hit home. He said this time we couldn't hold it. What's happened is Republicans have made an enormous cut to Medicare and Medicaid. And eventually it's got to trickle down. So is this just one of those moments? Like I've said, look, I almost can't stop it. It's only going to get worse. Maybe we need to feel some of that pain. Or is that just a privileged position, do you think?
Well, I think it's the truth. I think we're going to have to feel it. Who's going to pay for this? Well, everyone's going to pay. With the uninsured, underinsured healthcare, with many of, I mean, we know our citizens, whether they have access to insurance or not, they're going to need healthcare. First of all, it's going to drive healthcare outcomes way down because people won't seek medical care who don't have insurance until they're really, really sick. But also, who's going to pay for it? When we aren't affording our citizens healthcare, when our citizens are losing their healthcare, who pays for it then? Everybody's going to pay for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, the sad
no one will be spared.
Well, I mean, the reality is if you're not one of the fortunate ones, you're probably going to die sooner. I mean, you say what it is. This is rationing care to the point where either you can afford to get the care you need to live or, you know, better luck next time.
And many people are just choosing to eat rather than to go to the doctor. And that sounds cryptic and sad, but it's the truth. Many people can't afford healthcare even now. Even fewer of us are going to be able to afford healthcare with these cuts. But when that happens, people will definitely choose to eat first. If a family can't afford to live, can't afford to eat, what do you think they're going to prioritize in their home?
Right.
They're going to prioritize food.
Now, the part that is, you know, the part of the message that I've been explaining to some of my union friends is, look, you've got really great health care. I've got the best health care money can possibly buy. But if there's no hospital to go to, I live in a fairly rural area. If there's no hospital to go to, if there's nowhere to take that shiny card that gives you the best access to whatever's available, if there's nothing there, what do you really have? And this is my concern. And maybe a moment that we start educating people on how our system actually works and how our tax dollars prop up this entire thing. And without it, well, collapse.
Right. So our taxes will go up. Healthcare affordability will go down. Healthcare outcomes will go down. And probably access to healthcare will go down for all of us if we see a shutdown of services. And oddly enough, in the state of New Jersey, we have a large population of nonprofit hospitals, not-for-profit and nonprofit hospitals. And I could tell you the employees in our hospitals, you would think, would have great benefits. Their benefits will get worse. They already pay very, very high premiums. I paid very high premiums when I was working in the hospital. I was the carrier of the benefits. But healthcare workers in these nonprofit hospitals, they're not paying cheap benefits at this point. They're going to pay even higher costs.
No, and to your point, and look, you probably know this better than anyone. The one thing that out of my situation and my audience knows, I've been going through with my wife a long healthcare situation. The one thing that was shocking to me is just how paltry the benefits are for people who work in the healthcare industry. In the hospital, can't even afford to go to the hospital. And the other part of it is how many of the people who are working in these hospitals don't actually work for the hospital. They're temp workers. They're travel nurses. They're a third-party logistics company. It's quite remarkable of what we actually stayed in it. We actually went to a hospital, an LTAC, that was a hospital inside of a hospital. So we went to the hospital, the name on it, but it was a different hospital, different building, different staffing, different everything. So when you had to go between them, there was a layer of bureaucracy, and this whole system just seems wrong and broken. But if you take all of the rest of the money out of it, how much worse does it get?
Much worse. Much worse. I mean, I will expect that our premiums will go up, the cost of healthcare, the out-of-pocket expenses, all of it's going to go up, up, up. And for those who can't afford it, those of us who can at this point in time, will also feel the impact, in addition to those members of society who won't be able to have access to healthcare because they can't afford it. But I want to say that you mentioned something earlier about your wife and the long-term, the outcomes of her accident. I want to say we are all one small step away from a chronic illness or an accident that will lead us to poverty.
Yep.
I mean, healthcare in our country, you're right, it's already astronomical business. They make the profits that are made currently from healthcare, from insurance companies, even from hospitals. I mean, in our state, we have very, very wealthy hospital systems. We're a blue state, but we have few rural hospitals. So ours, it's big business, and we're all one step, and it's costly to us.
No.
And we're all one step away.
No, I've written about this, Debbie. You know, the reality of it, if it weren't for my union, you know, I have no idea how much more difficult the situation that we are in would be, because you're right. You know, it was a split second on a bright, beautiful Thursday morning that changed our lives forever. And without my union and without the union health insurance that we have, could have been much more stressful, much more costly, all of that. And, you know, the stories I could tell you of the union fund actually fighting the hospital system to get her the care that she needed is amazing to me. When you have a doctor who can hold the thought of this is the best place for her, but she can't stay. I can't imagine having to do this situation without the fortune that I've had.
Absolutely. The power of a union, right?
Absolutely.
The benefits of the union. Unions are traditionally the organizations that lead the fight in terms of better hours, wages, and working conditions. We are also leading the fight in New Jersey for safe staffing in our state. And that addresses something that hospitals have been traditionally doing in order to create more profits, which is to understaff or staff to the lowest possible number of staff, of nurses, to be able to make the highest amount of profits.
No, I've seen that.
We have one. We have one quite a bit, Rick, in our state.
And we've got a lot, and we've got a lot to do on this issue. Last line of questioning I've got for you, because I want to bring this back to the shutdown, because I kind of veered away. The shutdown is this kind of the focus here. Granted, day one, day two, probably not going to feel, the wrath of the cuts. When do you start seeing, if this prolongs, does this go a week, 2 weeks, a month? When does it trickle down and hit the local hospital, hit the local neighborhood? When do you see that happening?
I think that remains to be seen at this point. I think we're calling right now on the legislators to meet with the Democratic representatives, Congress people, senators, to get this fixed. We cannot have this go on too long, because I think it remains to be seen when this is going to actually start to impact our society. I mean, truthfully, we've already been impacted by this administration. So many things that we never thought we would see, we are seeing. And it's outrageous to me. It's just outrageous to me how anyone can actually not see it.
No, I mean, the fact that we're literally taking food out of the mouths of children and health care away from people who are in desperate need, and giving it to people who will have so much that they will never in lifetimes be able to use or spend or consume it. It's just that's the. But hey, if you would have told me that the Secretary of War would go in front of all of the generals and military brass and call them fat, lazy and woke, I would have said, no, that would never happen. But this is where we are. And it's frustrating and angering. But on this point, because I want to make sure I get this, because the messaging that's coming out from the right, from Mike Johnson and the Republicans, is that this is all about health care for illegals. We're giving health care to those people. I think this is the fight Democrats should be fighting on. I think this is an important issue. I'm curious. Last thought. Do you have a last thought?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to tell me what your last thought was.
No, I thought this is the ground to fight on. But do you
This is a disgraceful administration. It's hurting our country in ways we haven't even seen yet. Everyone will be impacted. Whether you see it or not, they will be impacted. I remain hopeful, and I remain ready, willing, and able to do whatever's necessary to make sure that we challenge these things coming down from this administration.
There you go. Debbie White, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think this is the right fight? Do you think Democrats have done the right thing? Because some of the messaging I'm seeing questioning that. I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day Americans awoke to fears the nationwide steel strike would spread rapidly to include key fabrication plants. 500,000 steel workers had joined 400,000 coal miners on strike the morning before. The miners resolved to defend their $100 a month pension, instituting what John L. Lewis called the No Day Work Week, emboldened the steel workers to walk out of the mills. Within 24 hours, 96% of all steel production in the country was completely shut down. United Steelworker contracts were due to expire on the 15th, but the writing was on the wall. The mill owners decried anything close to mine pensions as nothing short of socialistic and refused to budge in negotiations. United Steelworkers President Phil Murray thundered that those companies that failed to agree to demands for non-contributory pensions and insurance would be shut down. But militants warned that President Truman's fact-finding board had already watered down strike demands. The president's board had been established to put off two previous strike deadlines. The guidelines it issued only encouraged steel magnates to stand tough against United Steelworker demands. These included a 30-cent raise plus increased company insurance and pension contributions. Now, it had become a defensive struggle over whether steelworkers would have to begin contributing to health and pension plans through wage cuts. By the time steelworkers ended their strike 42 days later, they had won the $100 a month pension minus what they would receive from Social Security, and they had to begin contributing to a health insurance plan with no wage increase at all. Still, workers celebrated that they had successfully defended the United Steelworkers against the all-out union-busting drive.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I think my favorite story out of all of this is, evidently, the Department of Health and Human Services, they were told, now remember, these are the people who don't put anything in your emails, you know, no pronouns. Evidently, they were told to put in their going out messages in their email accounts that, you know, when you send them an email and you got to get the one, sorry, we're furloughed today, that they were ordered to blame Democrats. yeah, so you got to, Democrats did this to you. Even though, again, you know, Trump's in the White House. John Thune controls the Senate. Mike Johnson controls the House. John Roberts controls the Supreme Court. Everything is on the side of the Republicans. The only thing Democrats have is the ability to put up a little bit of a fuss. And that's what they've shut the government down over. Republicans have pushed this. They could solve this. Because Democrats aren't asking for much. This is the weird part. They're not asking for all that much. You know, it's like I've said before. You know, Republicans will come and say, well, we want to chop off both your legs. In this instance, Republicans are going, we want to chop off both your legs. And Democrats are going, well, I'd like to keep, you know, at least up to the knee. You know, at least keep the knee. Because maybe we can do something with that. No, sorry, no knees. No knees, no hips, no nothing. No shins, nothing. And are you surprised that backed into a corner, even Schumer? Because understand, not the steeliest of spines. That even he's going, not too far. Because Schumer was right. Look, you're going to give Trump a lot of power. And they do it. He has. They've gone after the blue states. They're cutting funding to all those places. They're firing people. They're doing all kinds of stuff. And I got to tell you, if I'm Schumer, if I'm the Democrats, I'm probably stealing a little more of the spine, because look at what he's doing. They're not negotiating. They're not going, okay, how do we solve this? Hey, we understand you've got a seat at the table. We need to work this out. We're adults. We're grown-ups. No. As I said at the beginning, this is not about governing. This is about punishing. This is about conquering. This is about making the other side capitulate. And if you look at Thune's responses to interviews that I've seen around, going, well, we know how they're going to cave. Because, well, as I talked about yesterday, you know, Democrats have in the past been the ones that go, no, we don't want to burn the house down. No, we want to save the furniture. No, we don't want children to go hungry and grandma to eat cat food. No, we don't want to, you know, to cause pain and suffering for millions of people. While Republicans are going, no, I got the match. I got the gasoline. Come on. In this instance, I think Democrats are on the right side of this. And I think the more we see what Trump, the kind of draconian things Trump is doing. And, you know, as we just talked with Debbie White a moment ago, you know, it hasn't trickled down to people yet. The pain hasn't gotten there yet. The tariff pain hasn't hit yet. The cuts to the Medicaid haven't hit yet. There's a lot of it out there. And as I've said all along, and this is where I guess I'm in a privileged position that I do have health care. but also healthcare that costs a lot and, you know, jumped up another, what, 800, 900 bucks a year? It's time. It's time to take a stand. Because understand, if you have healthcare right now, it's going to go up. If they gut Medicaid, there's no floor. Unless we're ready and willing to let people die in the streets. And this is where I've said this before. I do think that Republicans are okay with letting people die in the streets. What, you can't afford health insurance? Oh, well, sorry, we can't give you care. Sorry, you know, we'll just, you know, move you somewhere else. And the argument will be, well, this is where the churches should step in. Watch how fast they go under when Medicaid gets cut and slashed and burned. So there's part of me that goes, you know, maybe we need this. Maybe as a society, and I know I'm going to get some angry emails, but maybe as a society, we need this. We need to see our paper tough guy, how he cares about working people. Because this is an assault on working people. And every working person should be going, you know, thank goodness someone's fighting for me to stop some of the horrible. And this is what Schumer and the Democrats need to be doing more of. This is a working class issue. Billionaires got theirs. Billionaires, their government's working really well for them. It's you, it's me, it's us. And to say that your Democrats wanted this is ridiculous. Now, can you argue that they're going to get saddled with it? Maybe. But I still seem to think that when the dust settles and people look at how far Trump overreaches in these moments, how much they're willing to throw working people under the bus, the hope is that they wake up. Hopefully the Kool-Aid wears off. Hopefully it dries off a little bit, because they're going to start firing people. And then we're going to find out what Republicans or what Trump thinks of government. What stays? Who are the essential workers who are going to still be around? Because they're firing people left and right. They're furloughing people, you know, as we speak. Who do they keep? Who is it that gets to go on? And, you know, the sad reality is, for too long, and this is one of those things that's infuriating. For too long, we've had people in Congress who feed a narrow self-interest. And that narrow self-interest has been billionaires in corporate America. Democrats have done it too. Not to the extent that Republicans have. They're all in now. We're going to kick poor working people as hard as they can. And they're going to use the threat of immigration or all of that to go get this. The question keeps coming back to, you know, come next year when 2026 rolls around. How's this playing out? Do Democrats retake the House and undo some of this? Do they let the cuts go through and say, okay, well, if we take power, we'll restore them? Is this the kind of banana republic we want to become? Because what we've seen now, gloves are off. The question is, will Democrats do the same thing? And the answer is, I don't think so, because they believe in the rule of law. They believe in government of, for, and by we, the working people. They believe in institution. They believe in precedent. Trump and the Republicans, they just want power. Pure, unadulterated power. They want control. And if that speech the other day that he gave at Quantico didn't bear that out, didn't make you realize that, oh, these people are crazy serious. Not sure where to go from there. But I asked my red hat friends, is this what you voted for? I know, voted for going after those illegals. But is this what you voted for? Is this winning? Because it seems to me, with all the real problems we've got going on, this is the last thing we needed. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. As we approach the end of day two of the government shutdown, Senate Democrats and Republicans have dug in. ABC's Rachel Scott has more from Washington.
The Senate is back in session tomorrow, but right now these two sides do not even appear to be talking. Senate Majority Leader John Thune says if Democrats do not fund the government tomorrow, he will likely be sending lawmakers home for the weekend, which means the shutdown will drag on for at least another few days.
Republicans want to pass a short-term bill that'll fund the government into November. Democrats want Republicans to reverse Medicaid cuts and extend Affordable Care Act subsidies so health insurance premiums don't go up for millions. Caught in the middle of the stalemate, millions of federal workers, 750,000 furloughed. Police in Manchester, England say three suspects are now in custody for an attack on a synagogue. Three people were killed, including the suspect, and another three were wounded after police say the suspect rammed a car into a crowd and then began stabbing people. This is ABC News.